The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
I'll give you a brief epilogue because I do think it's so interesting that this year, well, not yet, next year, but this year of 2012, right, that we have spent so long talking about. It's nearly here. It was a fairy tale, far off, sort of weird thing that would happen in some, you know, unspecified future, wasn't it? And suddenly we're nearly there. It's incredible. Bear in mind, and I'm going to boast a little bit here, not about me personally, but one of the key 2012 researchers is Jeff Stray. Jeff Stray's book has been massively influential in spreading word of 2012. Where did Jeff Stray begin his career? This room. He gave his first ever talk in here, because he used to turn up to these meetings with his folder under his arm. We all laughed. Every year we went, Jeff, what is this crap you are talking about? And now the whole world's talking about it. Well, the whole alternative world. 2012, and he was right. And he gathered all these prophecies and kept saying, no. There's going to be a big change after 2012. It's in this culture, it's in that culture. And now everyone's talking about it. But it's interesting that he was nurtured originally back here. Still a great threat. But let's talk about this briefly. Because, and if you didn't already know, of course, the key moment where the 5,125-year cycle of the Maya calendar, the long count, where it ends and begins again, is precisely this moment, 11:11 a.m., 21st of December 2012. I mean, what were the odds that it was at 11:11? This mystical number so many people have been talking about for so long. But what I'm slightly concerned about is that as we're moving into next year, you'd be amazed how many people are not really understanding the prophecies. I'll just briefly take you through, because we can anticipate what we're moving into now. Bearing in mind, John Major Jenkins was the first person to point out that what the long count cycle seems to record is when the sun reaches galactic centre, this dark rift of the Milky Way as we look up into space. And it's at the centre now already, but for some reason the ancients or the Mayans thought this was the key thing. So this is certainly one of the things that they were talking about, but John Major Jenkins thinks this might actually have a physical effect, because he said that we then wind up in this alignment process where the Earth and the Sun and galactic centre are in perfect alignment for this short time, and he thinks we come into magnetic field resonance with it, which will change us, it will rewrite our DNA and all of this. And these are interesting ideas, of course, because there are so many prophecies that say there will be huge change. There's not many Mayan prophecies. People think there are loads, there's actually very few. This, for instance, is the only monument that we have telling us what's going to happen. This is Monument 6 at Tortuguero in Mexico, where it tells us that the 9 support gods will return, and they will then little. Because when you get to the bit where you need to read the end, it's been smashed off. So we don't know what the 9 support gods are going to do when they get here. Rather irritating. Most of the Maya prophecies that we talk of are based on the writings of the Jaguar priests or the Chalambalam. And they didn't write their stuff down until the sort of 1500s, in fact. It had been pretty much spoken word stuff until then. That's where you get the talk of famine and war and fire and flood and flesh-eating demons and all of this, you know. Actually, the Aztecs were hotter on the flesh-eating demons. The Aztecs, as you'll see in a minute, believe that that's how we're going to... Here we are, the Aztecs. That's how we're going to end this current cycle that we're in. Of course, the Aztecs are not the Mayans. And yet, whenever you say the Mayan calendar, the first thing you see usually is a picture of the Aztec sunstone. The Aztecs came later. But nonetheless, as Jeff Stray has pointed out, the Aztec sunstone is almost certainly based on Maya calendar stuff, which in itself was based on the earlier Olmec civilization and, you know, however many years before that. They clearly had folklore memory of cycles that seemed to do things whenever you got round to the turning of the cycle that we're now coming up for again. So yes, the Aztecs certainly had more doomy takes on it. The Incas, of course, in Peru had their own take on it. Here's Machu Picchu, of course. I'm sure some of you here will have been there. They've been waiting for the Pachacuti, or the turning over of the world. Now that's interesting because some have talked about axis tilts, or at the very least, magnetic field reversals. Okay, and bear in mind that, as you'll see in a minute, many crop circles have had something to say about that and have shown things that seem to suggest that kind of stuff going on. Well, you could say, of course, well, yes, but that's all South America and, you know, this is just information crossing the borders. Well, a little bit higher up, of course, you've got the North American tribes, the Hopi are quite big on all of this. They have their own take on it. They've been waiting for the Blue Star Kachina. Now, some have been saying, Comet Elenin's the Blue Star Kachina. When it arrives, it will herald the time of emergence and the great purification. But see, others think, never mind Comet Elenin, that maybe Blue Star Kachina's been and gone. Because in fact, this is Comet Holmes from 2007-2008, which as you can see is quite blue. And its coma, its ball of gas, at its sort of largest, was bigger than our sun itself, believe it or not. Very diffuse, of course. So was this, in fact, the Blue Star Kachina? Even some Mayan elders think it was. So therefore, maybe we are already in the time of the emergence. But all of that's in the Americas. But on the other hand, you can go right round to the other side of the planet and find the Maori have very similar prophecies, similar time cycles buried in there. And as Jeff Stray has pointed out this room before, one of their key prophecies about the turning of the next cycle, i.e. next year, is Kahinga Te Arai, which people thought meant the curtain will fall. But then somebody said, no, that's a misinterpretation. What it actually should say is the veil will dissolve, which has a completely different connotation to it, of course. Far less doomy, the veil will dissolve. So, you know, there's another reference. What about another continent, Africa? Some of the Zulu shamans have something to say about the whole 2012 business. Now, instead of Blue Star Kachina or Nibiru, what they've been waiting for is the return of Mushushu Nono. What a great name. Mushushu Nono. Again, it's this planet that's out there on a very large elliptical orbit. And when it comes back, it will wreak havoc and all sorts of interesting things. So we have another reference there. All the major world religions, of course, have a lot of cycles and prophecies and predictions that seem to play into this. I mean, you know, just two examples. You've got the Book of Revelation, which, of course, some, particularly the evangelicals, are trying to work into the 2012 prophecies. You've got the time of the Kali Yuga in the Hindus and so on and so on. I'm just giving you a potted view here to give you an overview of the fact that, hey, we're moving into these times now. So you can be reminded. And all the crop circles that we've had that have directly referenced 2012, make no mistake, for many people, they only know about the 2012 prophecies because of these things. This was, for instance, the first formation to make a direct reference to it. This was back in 97. There's a grid split into 780 boxes, which is therefore to the value of 3 zulkins. The Zolkin cycle of the Maya calendar being another component, of course, counting down to the turning of the next cycle. That was one of the first things where people started to talk more about 2012, and then weirdos like Jeff suddenly seemed a little bit more credible, you see. There seems to be a version of Jose Arguel's version of the 13 Bacton cycle of the Maya. That appeared in 2008 and is a near-perfect rendition of our solar system, as it will be, on 21st of December 2012. With only what is presumed to be Pluto in the wrong position. And not just slightly in the wrong position, it's in a deliberately wrong position if it's Pluto. Now others, of course, say, yeah, because it's not Pluto, it's Nibiru, or Mushushu Nono, or Comet Elenin, or whatever it's going to be. But nonetheless, there's, you know, that is a very, very accurate diagram. But this one here, which caused some controversy. It was opposite Silbury Hill in 2004. That's really the big one for getting word out there, because that appeared in the Daily Mail under the headline, The Doomsday Crop Circle, because it's full of mine connotations and therefore the 2012 stuff. So that formation got the tabloids discussing 2012. That was the first time it had gone really mainstream. Just because of a pretty picture in the fields. Interesting, isn't it? So you see, crop circles have been very much at the forefront of pushing these ideas of global transformation, consciousness shift, out there to the world. And just briefly to say, of course, many people claim to have had encounters with ETs and UFOs. Often these ETs transmit images of things that are going to happen, or they tell them that our world is about to undergo a huge change, a huge shift, due to occur kind of any time now. So this information has been seeping through from many, many different areas. And let us not forget, of course, that some people think that these ancient time cycles recorded something, not just a visual nicety of the galactic alignment and the sun, but maybe of cosmological cycles that do change our planet. And, you know, there's galactic superwave theory, these waves which periodically pass through, which I think has a lot going for it. And, of course, the solar cycles, which may well be affected by galactic superwaves. Let us not forget that NASA, virtually every month now, is saying you've got to be really careful what the sun's doing. Another news story this week, they've realised solar flares affect the Earth even more powerfully than they ever did. They are predicting that we're going to see some of the biggest solar flares that we've seen in quite some time over the next few years. The peak of the current cycle is going to be May 2013. But it could still happen tomorrow, or it could happen in the next few years. But when you start looking at the warnings NASA are giving on their own website to their own staff about we need to be ready for an emergency, it's quite uncanny. Because you think, what emergency are they ready for? And they claim it's just a drill. But then you read that NASA again and again is sending out warnings around the world, you've got to be careful what the sun does. So there's a lot of people now think we are going to have to be ready for something. Because, of course, the problem that we have is if the sun does throw out a huge solar flare at the wrong moment, it could knock out the world's electrics, you see. And when I say the world's electrics, in the worst case scenario, it wouldn't just be the power grids going off. You might find that you wouldn't be able to start your car either. Electromagnetic pulse waves can neutralise all electricity, including batteries. And if that happened, well, you're back to Stone Age for a little while. Well, no, maybe not Stone Age, medieval times. Are you ready? Have you got your stored water and food? Even if you don't believe in this, of course, it's very likely there is going to be a major economic crash any day now. Euro and the dollar looking very shaky. So when that happens, of course, there's going to be pandemonium, people trying to get food and all the rest of it. But what if it's something bigger like this? It will affect us all. But the good side of it, of course, is that some people say that very pulse wave from the sun is the very thing that will trigger our next stage of evolution. And that you won't care that you've got no electricity, because you will be having a mass out-of-body experience with the rest of the planet. Because your DNA is rewritten, and you find your consciousness rising to a new state of being, which, of course, is what many of the prophecies and the predictions say, is that the other end of the time of transition, we will be in a new state. We will be literally new kinds of beings. So that's the good side of it. That's nice, isn't it? So this, of course, is speculation, but you have to wonder that there's so many sources saying that these times are important. And that then, of course, ties in with the New Age sort of belief in ascension, the notion that we might be raised to a new state of being, which, you know, although we scoff at rapture stuff, well, maybe you don't, but we were earlier, in fairness, that's not very different to the ascension process. It's the same idea of rising up to a new state of being, albeit less literally. But maybe here's a reason that a massive whack of electromagnetic energy, either from the sun, or from galactic superwaves, or from the resonance of the galactic alignment process, could change things here. And everything that we've taken for granted might not be the same within just a few years. Now, don't get me wrong, we've said here many times, this doesn't mean that everything's going to happen on one day. To think that it's all going to happen on 21st of December 2012, I think is very naive, personally. I think we're already in the changes. But that marks, if you like, the official beginning of the new era of change. And of course, some people are saying, well, maybe that's what the whole world control agenda is about, because the last thing those in command want is us all suddenly ascending in the middle of the street or whatever, you know? And they don't want us to reach our full potential. That's why we have to be lied to by the BBC. That's why there are conspiracies and clear control and surveillance agendas. If you don't think that, all I can say is I wish I lived in your world, because the evidence is all around you that they are trying to crush the human spirit. But maybe because they're afraid of anything that upsets their old order and power structures that they have struggled for so long to put into place. So how are they going to respond? And next year, what the hell is it going to be like here when the Olympics are on? It's going to be the biggest security clampdown you've ever seen. Bear in mind, of course, the riots, and we didn't even talk about those, the riots we've seen in the last few months, which many people think were allowed to occur, or at least were stirred up. But it is really interesting that the police pretty much were ordered to stand down on the first night. Of course, that's allowed yet more legislation and people begging for control, begging for it, to the point where even Cameron was suggesting putting troops on the streets because people are afraid. Well, what if any of that kicked off when the eyes of the world were on us next year with the Olympics? And who knows what we're going to have. Now, will we, as I say, have something extraordinary happen here? Will, as Ian Crane says, we're going to have some very dodgy dark deed going on, some horrible false terrorist atrocity, or even fake alien invasion? Or a real alien invasion? How will you know the difference? That's worth asking yourself. And, you know, when you do look at the messages they're giving out, I mean, you saw them at the Olympic mascots, but look at the tower they're building. What message is Britain giving to the world? I'll tell you the message. Now, look at this monstrosity, in my personal view, and then hear what the architect had to say about it. He said, I wanted the sensation of instability. Not instability, by the way, instability. That's the message the tower is sending out. Britain, unstable. Interesting, isn't it? I think it's interesting. The message that we are already giving out about Britain is not a very positive one. And now people have already seen around the world the riots and thinking, oh, is this what it's going to be like? I hope that it isn't, but I think there's going to be a flashpoint. But at the same time, the plus of it is that whatever issues are being discussed here and are constellating are going to come together and will be seen around the world. And maybe it's no accident that there's something about Britain and England in particular that's brought many people who are concerned about this together. It's a global thing, of course, but the fact that so many people are talking about all of these things. And as Helen has said here many times before, when you just look at the astrology of the next couple of years, right, we're in for an interesting ride. England, just astrologically alone, is going to be right out there on the world stage. It was therefore no accident that we wound up getting the Olympics. But the problem we've got, because of Pluto and Uranus transits, and Helen will say a bit more in a minute if she likes, is that we're going to see that control versus those wanting freedom. Authority will be challenged by those who have had enough of being put in their place. And we're already seeing the beginning of that. You saw the beginning of that with student riots and protests, I should say, not just the riots. And I think we're going to see an awful lot more of this, even if you didn't know anything about any of the prophecies. So the point is, and why I'm saying this here, is that I do find it's really interesting. Do you know, in December, we will have been meeting in this room for 20 years. 20 years. Yes, believe it or not. In this same room. When it was a little bit bigger, but nonetheless. And I do find it interesting that those of us that have done the course, and some have come and gone over the years, but there's a few here tonight that were here from very early days. There's been a curve. There has been a learning process. I think the people that we are now are not the people that we were 20 years ago. We were all wide-eyed and it was all a big kind of amazing joke. There's something about the people that have been drawn to this phenomenon in particular, when it all began so simply with this. There's something about this that has shaped a certain amount of people into ways of thinking that I like to hope may be helpful over the next few years to help give people context for what's going on. And that doesn't reveal the hand behind this. We may never know where the crop circles came from, and maybe we're not even meant to know. But I get a funny feeling that, and I'm not saying it's just us, but other groups like us that have done the curve, certainly over the last 20 years, when those first really complex designs arrived in 1990, there's no question, there was a sudden leap, there was a sudden, whoa, we've got to wake up. A lot of people have, and I think that what that's been building us up to is now literally around the corner. And I think that we should be excited, and I think we should enjoy the ride, but we should also pay tribute to the things that have brought us here. The fact that any of you are in this room tonight, you've been brought here by something, by a certain pattern that has made you question the norm. It's made you question everything that you're told in the mainstream. And that doesn't mean that you would agree with everything you hear in here, of course not. But the fact that you're here, you know there's something up in the world. And we're just one little group amongst many around the world. There are millions of people who now know, they know that something bigger is going on than we are being allowed to know. And so when you get into an era where, for instance, more than half the world questions the official story of 9/11 or whatever it may be, you realise that a corner is about to be turned because the world can't go on like that. Critical mass. If you believe in the Rupert Sheldrake theories, critical mass of consciousness change could suddenly take over just when enough of a percentage of the formation, of people in the world, when they start to think a certain way, that spills over. And that suddenly transmits to the whole species. Okay? I have a funny feeling we're getting very close to it. There's a choice. Just enough more people can be made to think that way. Not made, I hate that word, but if they come to think that way, if they're offered another truth, maybe there's a real opportunity to create serious shift in this world. So that's a very deep and heavy way of saying that I think we're in for an interesting time over the next few years. And listen, I don't know any more than anybody what's going to happen, really, but I do think that the crop circles have certainly been a very, very good sounding board. And I hope you will agree that despite this year maybe not being as amazing as other years, nonetheless, once again, it's brought us back to be here considering these issues, and maybe that's all it was ever meant to do. So, thank you very much indeed. We have a few minutes. Anybody got any comments or questions? Please feel free. Helen, just say something properly about the Uranus-Pluto cycle.
Right, the particular cycle that we're in at the moment, it began in the mid-60s. So if you can remember what was going on then, we had a lot of people feeling that something wasn't right. You've got mass demonstrations around the world about fighting in Vietnam. In the Chinese Cultural Revolution, there was the whole world seemed to be in a revolutionary state. And people that were sort of repressed, especially women, we had breakthroughs. It's often a time of big breakthroughs with Uranus and Pluto, because you have that sort of raw libidinal energy of Pluto combined with the revolutionary energy of Uranus. So it's a time where people wake up and they question, and it brings big change. Now, this particular cycle is more important than other Uranus-Pluto cycles throughout history, because it's the first one we've had since the discovery of Pluto in 1930. And because Uranus moves faster than Pluto, it's taken sort of 47 years for it to move into the most dynamic aspect, the square aspect. So therefore these energies aren't working together, They're working in a very tensional kind of opposition towards each other. So therefore, and with Pluto, when Pluto moved into Capricorn, the planet to do with death and transformation of whatever that sign rules, so therefore Capricorn ruling governments, institutions, you know, financial institutions, it rules, it's an earth sign, it rules anything to do with the earth, and Pluto is causing a lot of death and transformation in these areas. And also, Pluto is the planet to do with power and control. And if you think in the 1930s, what Pluto represented, the darker side was the rise of the Third Reich, and the more constructive side was the birth of depth psychology. So it's a very, very deep planet. So with it going into the sign to do with governments, it's like the government's exerting more and more control. And then, since March of this year, Uranus has moved from the watery sign of Pisces into the very fiery, warlike sign of Aries. And since that time, we've had the Arab uprisings, and it's not going to sort of roll over and take things easy. It's going to fight, and it's going to fight for freedom. And that's why we're seeing the overthrowing of things that where people have been in power a long time, especially these despots in the Middle East, their time has come to be overthrown. So again, a huge period of change on the world stage, and it sort of does cover a number of years. In fact, all three outer planets, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, have changed signs very quickly. And every time an outer planet changes signs, we get a different outlook in society. And also next year, Neptune will fully go into its own sign of Pisces after 165 years. And whenever a planet is in its own sign, it's very powerful. And this will bring in sort of more spirituality and more of a search for redemption. It's very selfless. It works compassionately. And I think that will be a nice balance to all the hard, real-world stuff that's going on. So,
lucky astrology is a load of rubbish. Well, according to Brian Cox on the BBC.
It's on the BBC, it must be true.
Okay, some closing notices. We have a few leaflets left from the 9/11 day, which are just useful if you want to chase up some of this 9/11 stuff. Take a website flyer. There's loads of really, really useful websites on there if you want to find out why people doubt it. Take an apple, because there's loads of apples down here in the box. And I can see a few new faces. If you're not on our emailing list and wish to be, just write your email address and your name down there. If you're desperately wanting to know the meetings and don't have an email, you can put your postal address, but preferably an email. Please write clearly. Thank you. Our next meeting is 17th of November. We've got a guy called Jez Hughes, who's a very good modern shaman, but he really brings it into the real world, and I think we're going to have a really fun evening. So if you want to find out about modern shamanism and what it means to you, come here, 17th of November. So here Jez Hughes talking about the shamanic path. So listen, I'll probably put you through a lot tonight. Thank you for coming, much appreciated. Sorry the throat's a bit dodgy, but thanks for coming, and hopefully see you again soon. Thank you. Good night. Thank you. And of course some of us will be going to the Potters for a drink afterwards if anybody wishes to come. If anybody feels like stacking up the orange chairs at the
information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.